Helmets and Heels, brought to you by Underwood Jewelers on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. Here's Jessica Blaylock, Donna Murphy, Lauren Brooks, and Blythe Brumleave.
What is going on, everyone? I am in a fantastic mood. It is Helmets and Heels. It's Tuesday night. It's Broadway Restaurante. It's Will Blackman. It's Tom McManus. And it's a great crowd in the house tonight. Can I hear how excited you all are to be here? And you know what? Unlike me, who walked in the door about 30 seconds before the show began, Will Blackman was on time. So we've already got him on a headset. We're ready to jump right in. First off, ladies, how are all you doing?
Doing great. Great weekend. How about you guys?
Yep, you know it.
All right, we're good to go.
Fantastic weekend. Ready to rock and roll.
It was a warm weekend.
It was. I went on a boat.
It was Daytona 500 weekend.
It was Daytona 500. Did you watch it?
Yes,
every
I
second
did.
Of it?
Every second, I did.
I'm proud of you. You're the only female I know that wants to watch it all.
I love it. I love NASCAR.
I'll take the last 2 minutes, and then I'm excited that it's over and I can stop paying attention.
What about you, Will? Did you watch Daytona 500, or did you watch that Bruins smackdown of the Blackhawks? Because I know you're a hockey fan.
I didn't watch anything. I watched Nickelodeon.
Yeah, that is true.
No, I was upset because I totally forgot about Monster Jam, and I told a rider I'd take him, and I forgot about it.
Your adorable son, who has some of the best hair I think I've ever seen.
I'm going next year to.
I was
going to
say, just tell him that it didn't come this year, and so it's going to be next,
next year.
We'll
next
chase
year.
The tour.
Yeah, yeah. It's
how old is your son?
He's four.
Four.
Yep.
So that's what he's into, all the monster trucks and.
Yeah, he likes monster trucks. He's a boy. Monster trucks, dinosaurs, lizards, bugs.
Nice.
That's him.
Do you find that you learn a lot about those kinds of things in trying to teach him, like, dinosaurs?
Well, I don't need to teach him because he knows, like, the weirdest dinosaurs. Like, he, for Christmas, not for Christmas, for Halloween, he wanted to be a Pachycephalosaurus.
See what I mean about learning these things?
Exactly. No clue.
That is impressive.
Yeah,
can he spell it, too?
No.
Okay. Just making sure. I don't want to feel that dumb. Pachyo what?
Cephalosaurus.
Pachycephalosaurus.
Yeah,
oh, okay, yeah. That one.
The
yeah.
One with,
no,
yeah,
I definitely
the
recognize
the
it the second time around.
The one with the helmet, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, all right.
I know which one you're talking about.
All good.
All right, well, I want to jump right in with your career here in Jacksonville so far. And you and I have talked extensively about the time you spent in your career before coming to Jacksonville. But just for people who maybe don't know your background, before you became part of the Jaguars roster, it was a little bit of a struggle. You dealt with a lot of injuries throughout the course of your career, and just the way everything worked out. How did you end up in Jacksonville?
I ended up in Jacksonville because Coach Gus wanted me here.
Yeah.
So that's how it worked. It was tough because when I was on the Giants in 2011 and won the Super Bowl with them, so you think automatically you win the Super Bowl with the team, you know, you're going to get signed right away. And what happened was, ironically, that next year I didn't get signed by anyone. So I missed a complete year of football. And then I got in touch with the GM from Seattle, John Snyder. He was with me in Green Bay, and he ended up giving me a chance. And obviously, Gus coming from there, they had a relationship. So I made it all the way through training camp, and at they released me the Wednesday of the last week. And then that same day, within the hour, Gus called up and brought me here.
What was that conversation like, though, when they said, sorry, we're going to have to release you?
Oh, it was, for that situation, it was devastating. I've been released before, but it was just devastating because I'd been in a locker room where I knew the team was going to Super Bowl, and the GM was straight up with me in the beginning. He said, you can get released any day when he signed me, probably this time in 2013. You can get released because we don't need a corner. So I made it all the way past the draft, past minicamp, past OTAs, all the way to training camps. I made it to the very end, so I really thought it was a huge chance that I could make that team. But that was it.
Now, this is Jags, your fourth team?
Technically, yeah.
Technically.
Yeah.
So what makes this coaching staff set apart from itself from all the others?
I think just Coach Gus alone, he's just rare. He really, really understands and cares about the player. Very genuine. I mean, guys can get released, and he'll call another team as if he's their agent. Like, he's just that kind of a guy, you know, just truly genuine and truly wants to see you do well. And for me, I can play for any coach as long as I know what his motive is. And his motive, he'll tell you straight up, you know. That's what's really cool about him.
The losing season is always a little rough on the players. How would you describe last season and how the locker room was sort of kept together by the coaching staff?
Once again, it goes back to Gus. I mean, he's so powerful, so strong, and he doesn't change his ways because he has a you know, something he believes in, and he stays disciplined to that, and we bought into that, you know. And for me, it was a challenge because this is, since I played football since Pop Warner, this was my first losing season I ever had in my entire life. So it was a new challenge for me to go through adversity as a team. And it was pretty cool because at the end of the day, every week was still fun. Every practice was still fun. Obviously, we try to bust our butts to get a win, but I think definitely things will be better.
We're joined by Jaguars cornerback Will Blackman. And, you know, part of the challenge for those defensive backs, that unit this year dealt with a lot of injuries. I mean, you dealt with an injury, Alan Ball. How do you feel like you saw those younger guys, you know, a Jonathan Cyprian, a Dwayne Grotz? How do you think those guys handled having to play without some key veterans like you and Alan to kind of guide them along?
I think they picked our brains pretty good during the year to learn some stuff that they can take on the field with them. So I saw it show up, and I think just a little more, you know, preparation that they put in, being more disciplined, and they realized that, okay, Will and Alan's not there anymore, so we need to take the initiative and just step up and be leaders ourselves. And I think they did that themselves and made some plays at the end of the year.
Obviously, as a young player, you spend a lot more time learning the game of football. What's the most challenging part, though, coming into it as a veteran?
As a veteran, that you're trying to keep your spot because they're trying to get you up out of there. That's the tough part.
Healthy competition.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's definitely, that's the tough part. But it's definitely an advantage, though, just because you've seen so much football. So a lot of teams look for that to have some sustainability in their organization. This is so serious.
All right, fine. I'll turn it. So you're a native of Rhode Island, Will.
Yes.
Y'all are the only two people on Earth that are natives of Rhode Island.
Brent Martin.
Brent, yes,
and
Brent
Rick
Martin.
Ballou. We're here.
That? Oh, yes.
Four.
Yeah. Exactly. Where are you from?
Here.
Back to the Rhode Islanders. So did that make you be a Patriots fan growing up?
Unfortunately, I did not like the Patriots growing up.
Wow.
Like, nothing about them.
No?
Nope.
So who were you a fan of?
I just like players. I like Barry Sanders and Deion Sanders. My dad would take me to camps when I was younger, and we would see, like, Steve Grogan and all them when they went to Bryant College, but I just couldn't do it. Drew Bledsoe, couldn't do it.
What about the Red Sox? You're a Red Sox fan.
I am a Red Sox fan.
And a Bruins fan.
I am a Bruins fan and a Celtics fan. So I like the other teams, just not the Patriots.
That's all right. All is right as long as you're a Sox fan. That's good.
Yeah.
Favorite player?
Manny, even though he's not there. I love Manny Ramirez, dude. He was my favorite. He still is, even though he's crazy.
What's your favorite Manny moment?
Oh, when he went to the Green Monster and went to the bathroom. That's probably my favorite.
Yeah.
What would you say to A-Rod, by the way, if you could see him face-to-face?
To A-Rod? Nothing. I'm not that guy. I'm not the huge rivalry guy like that. Yeah, that's not me.
All right. Throughout the course of your career, who's the best player that you've ever had to cover?
Best player? I mean, there's a lot of different. Like, the best route runner was probably when he was Chad Johnson, before he changed his name. He ran really exceptional routes. Obviously, Calvin is just, you know, through the roof. And in practice, when I was in New York, I had to go against Victor Cruz every day.
Right.
And he's really, really explosive. And we were looking forward to playing against each other this year, but we unfortunately got hurt at the same time. So that was terrible.
Are we lightening it up enough for you now, Will? I know you're not always very serious.
You guys set the tone. This is
that's my favorite part about going into the Jaguar locker room.
What?
Are my interactions with Will Blackman. I don't get picked on.
By me.
Oh yeah, by you. Yeah,
I got picked on by Will the very first time.
I get picked on by Cecil on occasion too.
I was joking with you about you being a little younger, and you said, like, at least I don't look as old as you.
I said that. That is a lie. Look at you laughing. You just made that up.
It was something like that, okay?
It wasn't even, it had nothing to do with age. Terrible.
But that is such a fun part of covering the team because there are so many amazing guys in that locker room. And, you know, I think y'all hit a point earlier, even throughout the course of struggling in the season, that is a united locker room on all fronts, and it really is amazing to see.
Yeah.
What rookies are you looking forward to, rookies from last year that you think are really going to improve this upcoming season?
I'm a huge fan of Aaron Colvin.
We've had him on the show. He's fantastic.
Yeah, I think he just understands how to play the game of football. So he's one of those guys where the coach doesn't need to tell him much. Just give him the answers.
And such an inspiring story to all of you last year, too, right?
Especially yeah, it was cool that he got hurt the Senior Bowl with his staff, and they ended up drafting him, you know, give him a chance. And, you know, he proved, even with that the ugly-ass knee brace on, he still made some plays. But I really, really, really like him. And I think, you know, moving up year-wise, right now I'm going to talk about Sip. I think this is the year that Sip will make noise. He has every attribute to be a Pro Bowl player, and I think that once again with the right coaching, if you know, and him continuing his film study, I think he's going to have a huge year.
What's your thoughts on the scouting combine? You think it's anything worthwhile? You think it's a ridiculous joke? What?
No, I mean, coaches take it serious. It's when I went there myself, it was just real different. It's just real. It truly is just a meat market, man. I mean, the most uncomfortable thing is when you walk up in front of 400 guys in your underwear, and they just and you get on the scale, you measure your height, and you have to stand. You have to walk up to the edge and just stand there for like 10 minutes, and these guys are just writing notes.
What was the weirdest question that somebody asked you during one of the interviews?
I think I was with the Chiefs, and it was Herm Edwards and Gunther Cunningham. And Gunther got up, and he said, if you were in the alley, and this guy, and he got up, and he's like, and if a guy starts choking you, and he started choking me like for real, he's like, well, he goes, what are you going to do? And I just started laughing. I was like, I can't take you serious. Like, I don't know. What do you want me to do? But I heard, like, Mario Williams actually, like, threw him off and slammed him. He went number one overall, so maybe I should have did that.
That's what I was thinking, is you might have needed to show more aggression.
I thought it was so funny. That's why I was like, I mean, I can't. You're old, man.
Didn't you just recently run the 40 again to check your time?
No, I didn't run it yet. I jumped, but I didn't run.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think it'll be if you were going to predict?
Last week I jumped 40 and a half. Then I jumped 41 when I was 21. So.
Nice. Not bad. Not bad.
I'm still got it.
I'm curious because you mentioned Jonathan Cyprian, and there was so much talk about him before the start of the season, and I think there were a lot of expectations put on what he was going to look like in his second year versus his rookie year. How long, I mean, it's probably different for every player, but for you and maybe your experience, how long does it kind of take to make that transition from playing on the collegiate level to playing on the professional level, at least from your experience as a corner?
I just think it depends on who you have. I mean, collectively, when we say we're not doing well as a team or we're growing, it's not just the players. It's coaches. It's, you know, it's management, ownership. We're like, as an entire organization, you know, they're trying to make strides to put pieces together. So there's a lot of factors that have to do with trying to get people in position to do well. So I think once again he just continued to mature, and like I said, with the right coaching and put him in position, he'll be exceptional. I really, really am a huge fan of Sip and what he can do. And once again, I think sky's the limit for him.
Have you ever thought about being a coach?
You know what? No.
Really? Well, because you just see
long hours.
I could be a coach for like high school, but I would not coach in the NFL.
Really? Why?
Because I'm already away from home enough.
See, long hours.
Yeah, I can't do that, man. Like, I would work. I would either coach high school, or if I worked for a team, I would want to be. I want to wear a suit, so be with like Lamping and Shot in them. I don't want to do like the scout work.
I just want to be the owner of the team.
I want to do the cool stuff. I don't want to do the traveling on the road and driving and renting cars. And
if you're going to be like Shad, you got to grow out that mustache.
And the
I can't grow any facial hair. So. This took me 30 years to get. Yes, I'm 30, believe it or not.
Well, at least you don't look as old as me.
I didn't say that.
I swear. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us. And you know what's coming up next?
Boston College.
Isn't this supposed to be our show? I don't know. We're just going to hand it over to Will. Will, you just let us know whatever it is you want us to do next. It's totally
no
fine.
Way. We just got BC in the house. That's all I know.
Yeah, BC is in the house. We're going to have some Boston College talk.
I saw that. I was excited.
We're going to be joined by Tom McManus. We're going to let Tom McManus and Will Blackman talk together. It's going to be a lot of fun. So stick around. This is Helmets and Heels on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to Helmets and Heels. It is a special live broadcast at Broadway Restaurante on Bay Meadows, just a couple of doors down from Publix in the shopping plaza. Be sure to come out. They've got great drink specials, great pizza, great everything. So come out and join us. Hang out with the ladies of Helmets and Heels. Hang out with Will Blackman and hang out with Tom McManus, who joins us now. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
All right.
It's great to be here.
How exciting is it for BC to be representing
BC.
Right now?
Yeah. We have quite a few Boston College guys that live here. You know,
we
Pete
do.
Mitchell, Dave Whitell, Doug Whitell. So about a handful of guys, you know, from Boston College. So
you could throw Coughlin in there. You might as well.
Yeah, Tom. Yeah, Tom's got a house in Atlantic Beach. So yeah, you throw him in there. So it's a good spot.
It really
great
is.
Great place to live.
So if we asked for you guys to sing the fight song right now, could you do it?
God. I know the first.
We could, but we're not going to.
Well, well,
I couldn't.
Hear it.
For Boston is I know the beginning, but that's about all.
Yeah, and then we sing our.
It's been a long time.
That was it. Yeah.
It's been a long time. Memory's tough, you know. Memory's tough after a while.
Oh, but you got to remember.
You guys have mods then? Did you have them then?
I lived in the mod, yeah.
You
28B,
did?
Yeah.
Oh,
they
don't even
the notorious 28B.
The mods.
Yeah. I was a sophomore living with seniors, and it was like Animal House, basically.
It is, yeah.
It was awesome. It was awesome. Best year of my, my if you want to call it academia, but best year there.
Senior week. That's when it goes down. There you go.
What's the best story that you guys can share? On air.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have any together, so.
Yeah, no.
I can't share any, so I'll give it. No, you know, they're nothing too bad. Nothing too bad.
I graduated on crutches.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. That's
and it
no
took
fun.
Forever for me to get there. I held up the line. At least my last name is B. Because I actually got drafted, went to Green Bay, broke my foot, and I still had to come back to graduate. So that's a story.
That is that
you graduated?
A
that's a
yeah,
story.
That's
what
well
do you mean?
Done.
That's
got,
awesome. You
I
should
got
be
this
proud.
Far. I was like, I'm not going to just leave.
See? Good for you.
So what do you want to do after football?
I don't know.
You want to be like Tommy Mack?
Tommy Mack. I'm playing football as long as I can. So I'll worry about that when it comes.
Tom, tell me what it is to look at this team now as a former player.
Yeah.
What do you see?
Well, you love the owner. I mean, he to me reminds me of Mark Cuban. You know what Cuban did with the Mavs? It seems like he's, you know, hey, let's make this place awesome. I mean, we had a nice, everything was fine. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, but you walk in there today, it's a nice setup. There's no doubt about it. He takes care of the players. So that's number one. Obviously not, you know, disappointed in the record, you know, 3-13, right. 4-12, and you know, but it's hard. It's not an easy game, obviously. Anything can happen, but you know, obviously I think Kevin Hardy said it best. We've been doing these alumni weekends once a year that Mr. Khan put together for us, and he got up there and spoke this last one. He's like, you know, I hope this team gets back to where when we were having success, because this town just goes crazy for the Jags. Yeah. They go crazy for them now, but. And you get into winning, it's exciting. They're talking about you on Friday. They're talking about you on Monday. They're jacked up to go to work. You know, it's just, it's a great time. So we hope that for the guys, you know, because nobody wants to lose. You go in there, give it your all. You try your best. You study your butt off, and you expect to win. And then when you don't win, it's a drag.
You say jagged up?
Jacked.
Jacked. But I like jacked.
More
but
like jacked. Jacked.
Yeah, there it is.
That's a good one. I'm
there
jacked up.
You could, you know,
no, you.
Copyright
you, bro.
I'm not a, you know, I guess I'm a jag.
But one of the,
jag for life.
One of the things that was encouraging this season was watching the development of the defense and some of those young players like a Telvin Smith and Aaron Colvin who did come in halfway through the season and immediately make plays. And, Will, maybe that's something you can more speak to. You know, the defense started out the first few games giving up, I think it was 38, an average of 38.9 points per game or something like that. And, I mean, by the end of the season had really cleaned up a lot of issues. Where do you feel like you saw the defense take its biggest steps forward throughout the course of the year?
I think the biggest promising thing that got everyone's attention in our organization is the first half of the Philly game when we just beat them down, we shut them out with that potent offense, and then obviously what happened afterwards is just a domino effect. But when we saw that, we're like, okay, this is what it looks like. And then it's just a matter of just still trying to find our identity, still trying to get everyone on the same page. And then after the I think once we the Cleveland game, that's where they made a turn for that to really try to solidify what they're trying to do. So I think just with this year, you got the leaders, you know, the defensive line, you know, once they just send that energy to the rest of the team, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, the defensive line's awesome.
Yeah.
And the defense overall played really well. I mean, you know, especially for the amount of time they were on the field, they're supposed to work together.
Right.
You know, offense helps the defense helps the offense out, but they've got a very good defense. Top 10, 15, 10, maybe even higher, depending on how you play together, but you know, I love that D-line. And I'm like, you know, and I'm sure a lot of football guys are like that. You know, you got to build from within, I think. Got to have the horses up front. You got to have the D-line. Got to have the front seven. You know, and then you got to have the skill as well. But, you know, to me, if you don't have the guys up front, it doesn't matter what your skill guys are, how they are athletically or whatnot, because you're going to get beat. So that D-line to me was the epitome of building a great foundation.
Well, and how impressed were you with a player like Sendarik Marks, who obviously the Jaguars bring in as a free agent?
Yeah.
He signs a one-year deal, plays well enough to get a new contract, and then possibly even outperforms that previous season. And that's something that Dave and Gus always talk to is it's impressive when a guy like that proves it, continually proves it.
Absolutely. He had a great year. He's a great player. The D-line works together, too. You know, he had Red Bryant. You know, when they can't always double you, man, you get those one-on-ones, you're that three technique. You know, you're on the outside of that guard, and you're more athletic than that guy. You know, and then you got Clemens coming from the outside. You know, you got Branch when he was healthy. Davis, number 59. You know, you got some guys, you know, they all work together. Guys on the outside, keep them boxed in. Guys up front, you know, they push the pocket. So I think he worked well. He's a great player, not saying anything different, but I think that whole D-line is set up for a lot of success, who they have there and the way they play.
Yeah, I would agree. So, do you have a player that you're a rookie from last year's team that you're looking forward to watching next year?
Telvin's bad to the bone. I mean, he's, you know, when you can run like that, it's special.
What about guys on offense?
Well, I'm hoping for a lot of improvement from the line. You know, I think, and of course, Bortles, I think he's the real deal. He's fun to watch. He's going to be a good one, I think. But, you know, I the O-line as a whole, you know, I hope they can really turn it around. Because they turn it around. Now you got a chance. With that defense, you got a chance.
Now, before we get to the draft, you obviously have free agency coming up. I don't know how much you want to answer this, Will, or Ken, but what one free agent, both of you, would you like to have on this team?
One free agent?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know, like, who's out there like that. Really?
Do you think that the Jags should focus more on offense or defense for free agency?
I think we need to, at the end of the day, protect our investment, and that's Blake. Like Todd said, I think he's amazing. Also, given a lot of situations he was put in last year, he made a lot of plays himself that we were just, you know, through the roof with him. He plays so relaxed, so confident. I mean, you can go back and listen to when he was mic'd up against Tampa, his first live action. He's a goofball out there, and it's funny. And he's just so chill, man, and I love that guy, and I think he's going to be awesome. So as long as we can keep him standing upright, he'll make plays. Like last season when that little period where we had like a 3-4 game winning streak, that's because Chad was standing up. You know, he can find receivers. He can, you know, guys can have time to get open. You know, and I think, you know, if he just has plenty of time, we have explosive guys across the board. You know, we just need to get them the football as long as he has time. So I think protect our investment. That's my opinion.
How about you, Tom?
Yeah, I'd go right tackle probably. Yeah. You know, I know Bulaga's the hot name, but I don't care who it is. Just a, you know, I think your line needs an attitude. You know,
somebody angry.
Yeah, angry, mean, nasty. Want to bury you, lay on you, make fun of you.
Like a John Henderson angry.
Yeah,
or is that too angry?
Yeah. How about a Leon Searcy? We'll go old school. Leon wanted to take your head off every chance he got, and you know the whole line played like that. I think that would go a long way. Again, identity, you know, building from the inside out. So to me, I agree. You know, one thing about Blake, man, he's always looking downfield. Mm-hmm. That's God-given talent. You know, that's not – it's like you see everybody, but you're not looking at them. You know what I mean? You feel them. They're there. You know you're probably going to get hit, but you got to hang in there and make that throw, and he does that. Plus, he can escape and all that. So I agree. I would and I'd bring a veteran wide out probably, you know, whoever that – Randall Cobb or whoever that, I don't know, whoever the guys are. I'm in real estate investing now, so now I don't study the football as much as I used to. I look at Pro Football Talk on occasion, but, you know, just I think position-wise.
Well, and that's something Dave Caldwell even talked about, you know, at the end of the season, basically addressed to the media is how, looking back, he probably would have put a little bit more of a veteran presence on that offense, considering how young they were for the most part.
You know, Marco Coleman said something not too long ago when we were talking. He's like, you know, it's tough when you a young coach with a young team. So I like what he did on offense with bringing in those veteran coaches. I think that'll help.
Yeah, well, a young team, but a young team with a lot of personality. And, Will, I'm curious from your perspective. I know, obviously, walking into the locker room, you guys are all set up by your position group. But there are so many great personalities on this team, whether it's you, whether it's Sendarek Marks, whether it's a young guy like Telvin Smith. Who, in your opinion, are some of the funny guys in the locker room?
Well, right off the bat, I think of Telvin, and what's really cool and unique about Telvin, he came in day one, and he was himself. He came in just really excited, real passionate, screaming, yelling, because that's just him. He wasn't trying to be extra, trying to step in and be a leader. He was just a real passionate person who just loves football, is always smiling, always singing, always laughing, and is always working hard. And because of that, you know, he's going to play for a long time. So he steps out, and then you look at Sendarek, and he's funny because people look at him, and he's a little teddy bear, you know. he's a ham, too. He loves being on TV.
Yeah.
I think he's awesome. He's a great person as well, too. So those two jump out right away for me.
Let's go back to your rookie years, both of you. Who was the one veteran or the rookie, whatever, that really mentored you and really gave you a new way in how to follow in the NFL?
I mean, shoot, right off the bat, I mean, I'll go back to when I was in high school and even Pop Warner, that I had Charles Woodson as my screensaver. And then I remember I got drafted to Green Bay, and he ended up signing a contract with them. So I found out he was on my team, and I was floored, and I just couldn't wait to get out there and meet this dude and to be on the same team. So with him, I picked his brain, and I remember the first day I met him, I was sitting there eating lunch by myself, and he was looking for a table, and he walked over and sat right next to me, and I was just... I'd never been like starstruck like that in my entire life. And then the icing on the cake, I find out he lives right upstairs from me in my building. So with him, I mean, he's 38 and still playing a high level, and I still talk to him to this day. And so I say him and Al Harris, them two.
Tom?
My rookie year, although I ended up getting cut, was with the New Orleans Saints in 1993. And Vaughn Johnson was an inside linebacker. Him and Sam Mills, Ricky Jackson. Pat Swilling had just left.
Ricky
so
Jackson.
They had three. And those guys were perennial, all-pro, bad of the bone. Vaughn, I'll never forget the first mini camp. He comes out, and he's like 6'4", 260, and shredded. And we're playing this cover two, and the number 2 weeks to his side, he's got to go out and cover him. That was back when the receivers were like 5'9", 180, quick, you know, zip, zip, zip. And he covered that dude stride for stride all over the field. I was like, holy cow, this is real. They didn't see that in college, you know, but on and off the field. I got some funny stories with Vaughn Johnson that I can't share totally, but he gave me some great advice about off the field and was a great guy to go to. You know, it's great, too. You could always go to him. You know, it wasn't those kind of veterans that wouldn't help you or talk to you or whatever. And I was a rookie free agent, so I was like, you know, on the low end of the totem pole, and they would, man. They would take time to, you know, if you had a question about the defense or the call or whatever, no problem whatsoever, you know. And they were a great group of guys, great players.
It's very cool. All right, well, Tom, we're going to keep you around for one more segment.
All right.
Will, we appreciate it. You're the best. We hope you have had fun tonight on Helmets and Heels, your debut on Helmets and Heels.
Go home and watch some Bruins.
Go home and watch.
Go home and watch some Nickelodeon.
It's Tuesday. I got to watch Real Housewives Beverly Hills.
Yes.
And Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce.
Oh, dear.
I'm a Bravo fanatic. Yes, it's a well-written show.
I know we used to
show.
Talk about Real Housewives of New Jersey because that's the only one that I watch.
But that one, it's just...
That's gone off the rails.
It did.
I'm going to have to find a new one.
Well, it started with Orange County because... That's where my wife is from, and we lived in the neighborhood for 7 years. So we live next to all those crazy wives, and they are.
They're crazy.
Just as crazy.
Yeah. So that's how it started. We started watching them, then we caught on to the rest. I like Atlanta, too. That's cool.
Yeah.
I recorded that. I have to watch Atlanta. This is real stuff.
This is real life.
This is get on Helmets and
Heels. I get away from the aggression and watch estrogen.
That's why you're on with us.
I know. I love that I can always count on you to talk about Real Housewives with in the locker room. All right. He is Will Blackman. Tom McManus, also our guest tonight. You're listening to Helmets and Heels. Come out and join us. Broadway Restaurante on Bay Meadows Road. We'll see you there.
Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to Helmets and Heels. A big shout out to Broadway Restaurante for hosting us tonight. Are you guys having fun? You're getting to hang out with Will Blackman and Tom McManus, the ladies of Helmets and Heels. We got Rakeith, the conductor, in the house. What's up, Rakeith? We've got Marcel. Where did he go? So a ton of familiar faces. There he is. What's up, Marcel? Ton of familiar faces. We're having a great time tonight. Want to keep the conversation going with Tom McManus.
Yes.
I want to talk specifically about the defense and the same question that I had for Will. You know, we saw that defense get so much better throughout the course of the season. Tom, is there something that you can kind of pinpoint that whether it was a game where it kind of just clicked, whether it was a gradual progression, what do you think made the biggest difference?
Well, I think they started knowing their assignments first and foremost. I mean, all those points early in the year was a lot of missed assignments. I mean, how many guys were wide open in the secondary? Nobody should be wide open in the secondary.
Right.
Unless you got beat man-to-man. Guy just flat-out beat you. But if you're in zone, there should never be a guy wide open streaking. Maybe for a split second while he's going through the zone. So, but other than that, they shouldn't be that way. So I think just, you know, getting comfortable with the coverages. You know, I think and it's hard. You know, run pass recognition is one of the toughest things to do that the back seven has to do. You know, it's like linebackers, strong safeties. You always want to, you know, go forward. You want to, you know, stop the run. You see that play fake. One step forward, and that tight end's behind you. Now you're in catch-up mode. So, but I think, look, I think it starts up front. I think they are very good up front. I think they can get even better. And to me, you know, if you got a foundation defense, you can do a lot of good things. So,
any players in the draft that you like to see the Jags target
on defense?
Defense or offense?
You know, the big guys, I watched some of them in the combine. Man, they can move. I couldn't move. I mean, I could move a little, but, man, they move like unbelievable. So I like, you know, at number three, if the Williams kid is there. I think Fowler's interesting. He looked good. And I'll be honest, I don't watch a lot of college football, so I can't. You know, the combine is, I think, has a purpose, but I think Mike Mayock says it best. Does the tape match the, you know, athletic scores that you get at the combine, the jump and the running and all that. So, you know, I think he does a great job. But I think guys like that, you know, hopefully there's a quarterback sitting there and somebody wants Mariota or I think it's going to be Mariota and wants to trade up. You know, the Jets, number six, maybe, you know, who knows? You never know who the suitors are going to be. So they just need more. They need more playmakers. You know, to me, they need to solidify the O-line, get another playmaker at wide receiver, get a tight end, or at least use your tight end, for crying out loud. Everybody uses their tight end except us. Maybe get a running back. You know, I Toby, you know, God bless him, but I don't know. You know, they may need a workhorse. But you can always use a pass rusher. You can always use another DB. They need a safety.
He uses a lot.
They need a
we need a whole roster.
Well, no, not necessarily. I think there are some pieces to the puzzle that you have.
Quarterback, you know, kicker, punter.
Quarterback, kicker.
Jack. That's about it.
I like the young wideouts. I think they've got a lot of potential. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the one thing, the whole young thing that you heard all year, you know. That I'll give the receivers because it does take a little time to get together with the QB. Where, you know, am I throwing to a point or am I throwing to the guy that's open? You want to throw to the point, and you just know he's going to be there, but they're not there yet. So it's kind of hard to throw to a point if you don't trust and know that guy's going to be at the point when you deliver the ball.
I want to ask you specifically about a position you're very familiar with, obviously,
sure,
being a former linebacker yourself, the linebacking core for the Jaguars. Paul Posluszny obviously had to go out throughout the course of the season because of that biceps tear.
Yep.
You know, I thought JT Thomas did an admirable job having to fill in as the Mike linebacker, and he even switched up into that auto position. But the linebacking core and I think tight end have been two positions that the Jaguars have desperately needed an upgrade at.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you evaluate where that linebacking core is, and how badly does it need an upgrade?
Well, I don't think they have to upgrade Mike if Paul comes back.
No, for sure. They're set at Mike.
I don't think they have to upgrade Telvin. You know, the Sam, I can't recall who the other linebacker is, but you may need another guy there. So I guarantee you they'll grab one in the draft, you know, a kid that can run. You know, today's game, it's, you know, it's not a whole lot of two-gapping where you had to take that lineman on and you got to have both gaps. You know, now it's all one gap, so you got to be able to fly to that gap.
What's the most important aspect to pick a linebacker? What does he need to be the best at?
Instinct. Snuffing the ball out. I mean, you got to know where the ball is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? As a linebacker, you know, and you have to be a thumper. I mean, God gave me this big melon for a reason. That's one thing I could do. I could hit.
Well, the Jaguars always talk about being around the ball. I mean, affecting the ball in some way, shape, or form. And they did not have a lot of... They didn't force a lot of turnovers this season. I mean, that was kind of an issue, and that was
tackling was a little off.
Right. But they did get much better. They did get much better throughout the course of the year. But I think the next step is forcing more turnovers.
Yeah. And the one gap. The one thing I don't like about the one gap is a lot of guys, not just here across the league, all they think about is, I got my gap, I secured, I got the B gap. Ball could be way over there, but hey, I did my job and I got the B gap, where you really should be, all right, that's secured, I'm gone. So
Nick, you are definitely, I consider you an old school kind of guy.
Totally.
You know, as a player.
But I have three beautiful little girls at home, and I'm a ladies' man, too, with my wife. So
yes.
I'm a softie, too.
You are. But with old school, I'm going to go with how you played the game.
Okay.
So tell me what bothers you, bugs you about the way the league or the game is now.
Well, the rules stink, you know.
And which rules?
Well, like when I was playing, I'm getting old. You know, you could hit the wide receiver or the tight end that flashed in front of you.
Yeah.
As long as the ball wasn't out of the QB's hands. You could light his you-know-what up, and he deserved it.
You can say that word on the radio.
Can I with your show? Okay,
yeah.
I just want to make sure. You know, but
we said it last week.
You know, I miss the whole mystique of, in the defensive secondary, linebackers included, you don't get to roam through here freely. I miss that. Because I think that really was a great... tone setter, you know, for the entire game and for the entire team. You don't get to, you know, run your route in front of me with me not being able to hit you, you know. So I miss that.
But
if
now
I
you
had
can.
To pick one.
So obviously you got a lot of your aggression out while playing the game. How do you take your aggression out now that you're surrounded by women?
I'm you know, I get excited when I talk about things, so don't let the, you know, the energy fool you. But I work out, you know, I hit the heavy bag a lot. I do a boxing workout. I
picture people's faces.
I'm typically fighting somebody, I guess. You know, I don't know. He's usually a giant, way bigger than me. You know, that I got to take down, I guess. But no, I, you know, look, I am a very passionate guy, and I am an old school guy, but I'm more of a new age old school guy. I think, you know, communicating and celebrating and recognizing with adulation, and I think that's really important, and today's society needs it. So, you know, for my girls, I hug them all the time, kiss them all the time, but they also know, you know, if they come home with, you know, some trouble in school because they were acting up, there's your nose is probably going in a corner for a while. And with this bad memory, sometimes I forget I even put them in there. So, no.
Who was
it's great.
Who was the toughest player? Or you can go the other way. It was the one player that got under your skin the most.
I don't know about under my skin, but Dermonti Dawson, the center of the Pittsburgh Steelers back then, was phenomenal. And he, you know what? And he didn't bother, but it's funny because he would try to rip your head off, but after the game, he'd be like all smiles. He'd be like, "Great game." And you'd be like,
you didn't like that either, yeah. Did you?
You're no, not I didn't that mind type. That. After the game's fine.
Okay.
You know, I actually like some of the talking. As long as you back it up. I don't, like, I love Richard Sherman. I think he's awesome.
Yeah.
And he backs everything up. So, and he's not too vulgar, you know, he's not too bad. He's not talking about someone's mother or their wife, you know. Or,
we don't know what he's saying on the field.
Well, I don't know. I don't get the feeling that he goes that route, because more guys would fight him. If
that's
they
true.
Said that, they'd be like, "This, forget you.
Pull
I'm
his hair
going
out.
After you, so pull his hair out."
What about the opposite effect of what Andrew Luck does whenever somebody hits him or sacks him? He says, "Oh, good job," or "Nice hit." What would that do to you?
I try to hit him harder, but he's a big dude. You know, he's 6'4", 240.
Right. He'll throw blocks himself. Yeah. He does everything.
You know, these quarterbacks aren't little. You think, you know, quarterbacks should be, you know,
Russell Wilson types.
Yeah, slender, and they're not. They're big guys, man. Even the, you know, when I got to meet some of the old school guys, going to Super Bowls and you know, and all that. Dan Fouts is huge. You know, Boomer Esiason's big. Dan
Marino's
big.
Yep.
You know, they're big guys. So, and they have to be, because you got even bigger guys trying to rip their head off. So, you know.
Yeah,
and they deserve it, too.
I don't want to wrap this up yet. I feel like there's still so many
time?
Great questions.
Oh.
It doesn't have to be time. We
I know.
Can
yeah.
back.
I got a little time. I am picking up my number two from dance at about 8:15, but I can get there.
All right. Well, what type of dance?
Jazz, tap, ballet.
Very
they just
nice.
Had a great competition this past Saturday and Sunday. I go to this. I laugh. I go. I bring my mom, who's 83. She just laughs like
I think
your
adorable.
Father would be like laughing his butt off watching you, watching them.
My brothers, you know, used to have to come to every recital.
Yeah.
And they're seven
it's
years
fun,
older
though.
Than me, so they hated sitting for 2 hours just to see me in like two numbers. I hear you.
Well, my
I,
wife
I miss
was
it.
A dancer, so she's, you know,
yep.
really connected. And
that's awesome.
It's fun.
All right,
fun.
We're going to keep you around for a few more questions before you have to go pick up the little one from dance. Practice. All right, so a little bit more with Tom McManus when we do return. Also, tonight, Lauren, it is the opportunity for our listeners to get to know both you and me. So,
yeah, kind of scary. Yeah,
a little bit.
Bum, bum.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes.
I'm not
going to
be as nervous as Bly Boy, though.
All right, that's all coming up.
I handled it well.
On the second hour of Helmets and Heels live at Broadway Restaurants and Pizzeria. Welcome back to Helmets and Heels. We're going to call an audible. Switch things up a little bit and keep Tom McManus around for a few more questions because we're just having such a great time talking to you. I want to ask you, okay, we talked about defense, the linebacking core, rookies like Telvin Smith. I want to ask you specifically about offense because I think Will Blackman made a great point. You got to protect your investment. Your investment is Blake Bortles, and you got to build around him.
One thing you hit on earlier is there's a lot of potential with that wide receiving core, but it's a lot of unproven guys. You know, whether it's Allen Robinson or Marquise Lee or Allen Hurns, who I thought did an amazing job this season as, you know, an undrafted rookie free agent. What areas do you feel comfortable with the offense heading into this season, and what do you feel like is still a concern?
Quarterback, comfortable. I'm pretty comfortable with the wide receivers, to be honest with you. I think Hurns is going to be a heck of a player. Marquise Lee, if you know, he's got to do a little more work, but he's got a lot of potential. I think they need a veteran guy. I think that would help, obviously. But honestly, I think you're O-line. I think you're O-line. You know, pass protection's not good enough. Need an attitude.
You want some nasty guys.
You got to be nasty. You do. You know, hey, there's nothing wrong with being nasty and then being a gentleman off the field. That's perfect. So, you know, I think that is perfect. That's how guys should be, you know, whether it's any sport. Growing up, you know, still open the door for Ma when you're trying to get, you know, after getting a rebound. You know, using your elbows, knocking them down, and then Ma needs help in the door.
If he's reinstated, do you think the Jaguars should take Justin Blackman?
Yes. Kidding me? I was just going to say, I hope he comes back. Cause, you know, and first and foremost, that he's got his act together, that he's got his life together, that he's healthy. You know, that's first and foremost, but absolutely take him back.
Agreed.
I think they've, first of all, it's a smart business move not to let him go. I mean, you're not going to let that guy go because someone's going to take him. And if he does get his act together, which we all hope, and it looks like he is, someone would really, you know, reap the benefits of that guy. I think he reminds me of Dez Bryant. I think he could be a Dez Bryant type player.
He is a talented player.
I like him a lot.
It would be interesting to see, though, if he came back and played as well as he did towards the end of that last season that he was here.
I think he will. You know, he's still young.
I think so,
too. You know, gosh, 25, 26, 27, at least, that's like your athletic prime. 28 even, you're like...
Well, ladies, it's over for us.
Well, for guys, anyway. You know, he's still young. He'll be fine. Hopefully he, like I said, got it turned around and is hungry to come back, you know.
Who are some of the players out there in the NFL currently that you would have loved to played with?
Oh, gosh. Well, Haloti Ngata would have been fun to have in front of me. I mean, he wouldn't have to take on a block the whole game. That'd have been kind of nice. I don't know. Would have loved that. I'm a huge Tom Brady fan, and I'll tell you why I'm a huge fan. Every play matters to that guy. He's got, think about what he's got going on in his life. You know, the
Giselle.
You got to include that because she's so high profile, right?
Yep, right.
You know, they go out, the paparazzi follows him. I mean, they. You know, he's got so much going on. I've seen so many guys put it in neutral and be like, whatever, I'll just do as, you know, good as I need to, and we win, we lose, whatever. That guy wants to win every single Sunday, and I think he's phenomenal. I'm so glad he won number 4. I really am. And not just because I'm friends with Murphy. I like the Pats a lot.
That's right.
I don't care about all that other garbage that, you know, the Gates and all that. Doesn't mean nothing to me. I love Belichick. I love that organization. I met Mr. Kraft once, and he's like, he was at my Boston College Hall of Fame ceremony, and I got to meet that guy in pure class. So I'm a big fan of.
You were with the Jaguars from the start of the franchise. Do you have a moment that is the most memorable to you in your playing days with the Jags?
Oh, God. You know, not to get too emotional, but the year after my father died, who I was very close with, I'm the youngest, and he was my biggest fan. I was out of football for 2 years, so I was, you know, I almost hung it up and moved to Boston and got a job and all that, and then Coughlin's linebacker coach, who I knew from BC, gave me a chance to come down and work out. So I made the team and whatnot. My dad, that whole year, my mom and dad, they were living in New Smyrna Beach. They'd come up every home game, and it was awesome. It was for the whole family, you know?
Yeah.
And he got sick, cancer, later that year and died in a month of diagnosis. He was 75. He was a great, great, great man. So that next year, I go into training camp, and I have to make the team. So I make the team. Fourth game, we're up in New England, and the starter gets hurt. So I'm second string, and in I go. And started that whole year. You know, I was 10 in bar 2 years prior. I was on Division Street, Chicago, slinging drinks. And here I am starting for the Jags, and we go on that run. And next thing you know, we're beating Buffalo in the wild card. We're beating Denver and then New England. So to answer your question, that year was very awesome. But one of my favorite moments, we beat Denver. People are in the stadium. You all know the story. We're walking through the tunnel. And I see down in the hall these 255, my old number, teal jerseys, way down in the tunnel. And I'm like, I look at my watch. It's 2:30 in the morning. I'm like, what in the heck is that? Get closer. It's my mother and my oldest brother. And gave him, you know, obviously it was a very emotional time. And I said to my mom, I said, how'd you get in here? She goes, I told him I was your mother. I said, all right. I said, you want to go out there? And we all went out there. It was like the most awesomest. Sure. Great night. Great night.
Very
so
cool.
That was fun. I was very fortunate to play this game, very fortunate to play here. You know, Tom Coughlin knew me from Boston College, so I had at least, you know, a relationship there. But I was, you know, I wasn't supposed to make it, and I got a chance to make it. So I'm very humbled by it, but very grateful and thankful. And, you know, above all else, I met my wife here, and we're celebrating year 15 in April and have three beautiful girls. And
what present is that, 15?
What's that?
What present is that, 15 years?
President?
Present.
Oh, trip. Trip.
Oh,
yeah.
Where are you going to go?
We got a trip planned.
It's a surprise,
yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah, it's going to be a surprise, but it'll be nice.
I'm
a little worried to go international. Just, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe go south. You know what I mean?
Flights are the biggest
thing. We like, we're beach people. You know, we like go to the beach.
Yeah.
We don't eat much. Just the beach and a drink around 5 o'clock or 2 o'clock, whatever. Whatever
or 10 o'clock, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No judgment.
Whatever it may be. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm a big fan of Jacksonville. I've been here 20 years now. And although I'm from Chicago and went to school in Boston, I consider this home. So I want the team to do well. I want the city to get back to, you know, when we were rocking. And I think they're on their way, you know. I love the shipyards idea.
Oh, how that's awesome.
That's pretty
is that
badass.
Yeah, it's very badass.
Yeah. I watched that whole virtual thing today.
Yeah, it's
online.
Incredible, isn't it?
That gets done. Our city. We'll have another Super Bowl if that gets done.
Yeah.
Mark my words. Super Bowl done. We'll have it back here in Jayville.
There's no question. Well, we just we want to thank you so much for
joining us
and for sticking around a little bit later. Big round of applause for Tom.
Yeah, great to be here.
Don't forget daughter number two.
What's that?
Don't forget to pick up
number two.
Number
you know why I call her number two?
Because she's the middle one?
No. Well, no. We had this debate. She said, Daddy, I'm not number two. I'm the middle child. I said, no, you're not. You're number two. She goes, no, I'm not. I'm the middle child. I said, if we had four kids, what number would you be? She goes, two. I said, see? You're number two.
So that means you're leaving the door open for more.
Yeah. Oh, I'm game. I don't know if my wife is, but I'm game.
All right. Thanks again, Tom. We really appreciate it. All right, let's break a little early because when we come back, Lauren, you and I are on deck
for
getting to know you. That's coming up next on Helmets and Heels, live at Broadway Restaurant and Pizzeria on Bay Meadows Road, just a couple doors down from the Publix. So be sure to come out and join us. We
for
have
the pub.
This delicious pizza sitting right in front of us. I'm excited to see what that is. So
that bacon?
It looks like it's got some bacon on it. So
in my head, I sound like a dog.
Bacon. Winning. But yeah, lots of great drink specials, lots of great pizza specials and everything. So be sure to come out. Broadway Restaurant and Pizzeria, Helmets and Heels, live on location.
Jaguars football, 5 women, 4 women, and men. Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
I know there has to be a reason behind this, but the reason mainly is because we're getting to know about Jessica, so Led Zeppelin had to have been played.
Oh, there's no question. Led Zeppelin is my all-time favorite band. Name me a song. I'll tell you what album it came off of, what track title it is. By the way, that was When the Levee Breaks off of Led Zeppelin 4. It is the last song on the album. That's how they wrap it up. And I love the harmonica. So When the Levee Breaks starts out with fantastic harmonica. So that is a top 5 all-time Zeppelin song for me.
So we have kicked out the boys. Will Blackman, Tom McManus have left. Broadway Restaurante is now just us ladies here. And the fans, obviously. And it's get to know
and Donna's
Jessica. It's get to know Jessica moment right now. So I have my first question for you. Why Led Zeppelin? What made you such a music fan?
You know what? It's funny. I grew up in a household where my dad was all about two things, sports and music. I mean, I literally remember music just always coming from the living room or, you know, all these albums kind of spread out everywhere. And my dad loved Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and Yes and AC/DC and The Who. I mean, just he's got fantastic taste in music. And because he has no boys, it's all girls, he had to pass those down to us. And I just kind of took to the sports aspect, obviously, and the music aspect, and really, really fell in love with Led Zeppelin when I was like 18, 19 years old, and I have not looked back since then.
I'm going to go in a completely different direction than music and sports.
Go for it.
I think a lot of people know that about you if they listen to, you know,
sure,
any time between 3 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Yeah, any day of the week, pretty much.
But what are you afraid of?
I am, you'll appreciate this as a fellow Florida alum, I am deathly terrified of alligators. I will not go in any body of water in the state of Florida besides the ocean because I have this fear that I am going to be snatched up by an alligator, death rolled, and saved for dinner at a later date. Because alligators don't have enough respect to just eat you immediately. They'll store you up for later. So alligators and crocodiles just absolutely terrify me.
Well, I was afraid you were going to say something like Florida State beating Florida.
It's alligators.
I thought
it's
she was going to with I'm afraid of bulldogs or something. I didn't know where she was going with that.
No,
or roaches. There's a lot of roaches in Gainesville.
I can handle roaches. I don't ever want to have to come face-to-face with an alligator or a crocodile.
Where did this fear originate?
You know what? I've thought a lot about this. I've tried to self-diagnose
it's kind
this
of random.
Fear. And I think I finally figured it out. So every year growing up, my mom and her mother, my Nana, would take my sisters and I to St. Augustine for a weekend. And we would go, you know, to Ripley's Believe It or Not. And we'd do like all the fun little local stuff, and we'd always go to the alligator farm. We would always go to the alligator farm. And I think at a young age, that early, learning about alligators and how powerful they were and dangerous and things like that, I must have just developed this crazy fear of alligators.
Are you missing a toe or anything?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Or a hand like Chubbs from Chubbs.
Oh my God, I wish. Yeah, just like a damn fool. No, that would actually be awesome.
So
but,
you would not go ziplining over the alligators
no,
at the alligator farm?
No, I haven't been to the alligator farm in years. I am legitimately terrified of going back. I don't, the thought of alligators. Let's move on to another subject.
But this has been kind of fun. It's like torturing you.
By the way, just in case you do ever go, they do sell beer at the alligator farm.
That might make the experience a little bit more enjoyable. This
I would say that
around.
Wouldn't that be worse? What if you got tipsy and fell in?
Oh my God, that would be the worst.
I'm gonna have nightmares tonight.
I know.
I do. Dreams all the time of being attacked by alligators. I swear it is so bizarre.
All right, so how about this? What is your most embarrassing moment?
Oh God, where do I start? I have one for like every year of my life. In fifth grade, I was selected out of every fifth grader in the entire elementary school, I was selected to read my DARE essay about staying off of drugs to a school assembly, and I tripped on the microphone cord walking to the stage.
Is that when you had the boy haircut too?
And the bifocals and teeth that had yet to experience braces. So yeah, it was a lose-lose situation in fifth grade.
Why'd they pick you?
Because my essay was awesome. Because my essay kicked ass. That's why they wanted me to read it. In sixth grade, I loved my Easter dress so much that I wanted to wear it to school. So my mom let me. I was playing bound ball in gym and a gust of wind came by and flew my dress up. That was embarrassing. Middle school's already tough enough, but then when you accidentally expose yourself, it makes it that much worse. I cut my hair super short in sixth grade and wore overalls one day, so people started calling me Farmer Jessica. In seventh grade, I'd yet
it's
to...
It's kind of a cool nickname, though.
Not when you're in sixth grade. In seventh grade, I'd yet to discover tweezers, and I had a little bit of a unibrow situation, so people called me Bert. You know what? All this stuff eventually makes you stronger. I feel like I am better off in life for the adversity that I dealt with in my younger days. Do you want me to keep going? I mean, I probably have...
I was going
to
say...
My high school graduation...
I don't think it's embarrassing, because you're
fit,
just like...
Let me fit this last one in. Yeah, I'm just owning it. My high school graduation... I was a senior class officer, so I got to sit on the stage. I actually got to pray before the ceremony, which was really cool.
What is a senior class officer?
I was our senior class chaplain. I mean, you had a president, a vice president, treasurer, secretary, chaplain, and I was our chaplain. Basically, I got to hang out for like a free period in the office. I mean, that's really the main perk of being a senior class officer. And, so afterwards, since I sat on stage like during the actual ceremony, afterwards I was trying to find my parents, and so I decided to stand in one of the chairs, but they're folding chairs, so you've got to balance your weight versus putting all of it on the back.
Oh dear.
Nope. Put it all on the back. Chair collapsed. I kind of like fell through it. There were at least five or six families videotaping the whole event. So I'm guessing one of them eventually won like 10 grand on America's Funniest Home Videos. I haven't seen a dime of that money. I'm not sure what happened to it. But yeah, so I fell through a chair basically in front of my entire senior class and every parent in attendance with video footage of it.
Do you have any embarrassing radio moments that you would think of?
Not really. I mean, screwing up my updates because Beef is standing in the room.
Dude, that is awesome.
Staring at me or like 2 inches away from my face while I'm trying to read. He would go in and change the words in my update. So while I was in the middle of reading it, instead of saying like two guys would be playing on the same team together, they would say like, you know,
you guys are doing dirty things together. Yeah.
Hey, for those of you that don't know Beef, man, Beef was he is the ultimate producer that everybody wanted to be.
There's no question.
When the drill was SFR, he was their guy.
Yeah.
He was awesome. He taught all of us everything
He's one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. Yep. But he's like the older brother I always wanted, but then when I met, realized loved, hated. I adore Beef, but yeah, that's probably the only embarrassing, quote-unquote embarrassing radio things is when I'm trying to actually be a professional and Beef is anywhere in the vicinity.
Do you have a favorite moment covering sports?
My favorite moment covering sports was when I got to interview Steve Nash after a Lakers Magic game. It was the first time that L.A. had played Orlando since acquiring Dwight Howard, and so there was so much attention on the game. It was such a big deal. The crowd was amazing. I mean, they booed Dwight every single time he had the ball in his hands. But to interview a guy like Steve Nash, and he was such a pro about it. You know, the Lakers obviously won that game. And afterwards, Dwight Howard and Jameer Nelson were meeting at half court and talking. So it took our camera guy a little bit of extra time to get over to the interview. But Steve Nash stood there, introduced himself to me, was so patient. It was a great interview. And in my opinion, it was probably one of the better interviews I've done in my career. And so that was just a really cool moment. It's one of those moments you kind of step back and think, wow, this is what I get paid for? Like, this is what I get to do? It's just that kind of realization of, wow, I'm living my dream, and this is such a cool moment. And I also got to interview Jack Nicklaus, who was at a high school football state championship game when his grandson, Nick O'Leary, played for Dwyer. And I got to interview Jack at the half, and that was another amazing opportunity.
That's a pinch yourself moment.
Yeah, I mean, he was so funny, and just the way he spoke about Nick, and he joked around, and just it was really cool to see that side of him, and what a legend, obviously, in the golf community that the Golden Bear is.
After going through what I'm going to term was an ugly duckling childhood.
Oh, it was. It was.
And I'm not saying that because I thought so.
You've seen the pictures.
But I'm going off of what you have said. But so how did you at any point in time realize that
broadcasting would be the gig for you?
So in seventh grade, which was still a rough time as far as the looks department, I...
Clearly you've come a long way.
Thank you. I signed up to take a journalism class as one of my electives, and I got to do the morning announcements for my middle school, and I remember the first time that someone said hey to me in the hall, who I had no idea who they were, but they knew who I was, and I just assumed they must have recognized me from seeing me on TV. I was like, oh, done. This is what I want to do. Like, hands down, I want to be on TV. I want to be a broadcaster. So I knew from seventh grade on that I wanted to be a journalist.
For the fame.
Totally. It was there were no pure intentions whatsoever. I was like, I just want people to see me and know who I am. But my junior year of high school, I fell head over heels in love with that Florida basketball team that made it to the national championship game against Michigan State because I had a massive crush on Teddy Dupay. I'll totally admit it.
What?
Yes, I was all about Teddy Dupay.
He and I were in my freshman African history class together.
Perfect. And so I just, you know, I thought to myself, yeah, this is even a more noble reason. I thought to myself, hey, if I cover sports, I could totally meet Teddy Dupay and get to interview him. But no, it all worked out, and I'm so incredibly blessed and thankful to be able to do what I do. And luckily, I feel like at this point in my life, I have a little bit more respect for, you know, my
Your
job.
Eyebrows.
Yeah, for my eyebrows, for sure. But for my job and how I approach it, not so much about just wanting to be on TV anymore.
Well, I think you've learned how extremely time-consuming it is to prepare for even just one game. You tell us how you know, many notes you make.
Pages and pages
hours
of notes
upon hours,
that
right.
You usually end up throwing out about 70% of it. I finally figured out this year what the most difficult part of my job is, because really at the end of the day we get to cover sports. It's not a tough job. It's a dream job, but I finally kind of figured out, you know, as a sideline reporter in a lot of the capacity of what I do, you prepare just as much as everyone else. You prepare just as much as, you know, a color commentary, play-by-play, an analyst, but you only get to work in, you know, an eighth of what you spend hours and hours and hours preparing for. And, you know, still at the end of the day, totally worth it. But I finally think that's what I've landed on as the toughest part of this job.
I think that's a pretty good thing to, if that's the worst part of it,
right.
You know, that's still
absolutely
pretty good.
Absolutely.
What about the people who say that the game should get rid of sideline reporters? What do you say about that?
Yeah, and you know what? There are a lot of times, and I mean, I probably shouldn't say this because I am a sideline reporter, but there are a lot of times where I'll watch a broadcast and think to myself, wow, that position didn't really add much. But then a perfect example is the Super Bowl that was played in New Orleans when they lost power,
right?
Mm-hmm. Tracy Wolfson was all over that story. I mean, she went and tracked down people to try and find answers. When they went to check in with someone, I mean, she was the person they went to.
She interrupted the electricians.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a perfect example of an opportunity. You know, I'm not about trying to fit a sideline reporter in just for the sake of fitting them in. I'm about fitting them in when it works and when it adds to a broadcast. And you know what? Some games, that's only once or twice. Some games, maybe it is 10 times. But you see the value of it with a sideline reporter like Tracy Wolfson, or a sideline reporter like Allie LaForce, who I think is one of the best in the business right now. I think she does an incredible job. You know, injury updates, what are they saying in the huddles? What can you really pick up on from the demeanor of players and coaches and things like that? You know, there are going to be things that only you get that perspective on the sidelines. And when it works really well and you can see the value of it. But when you try and force it, it doesn't always come off great. So I'm much more about being natural, being a natural addition to the broadcast rather than just fighting for airtime.
Well, and that what people don't realize, I think, is that that sideline reporter gets to spend so much time around the program prior to the game.
Right.
So they actually do have a lot of knowledge that even sometimes the color and play-by-plays don't necessarily get, because they may get a one-on-one with one of the assistant coaches that, you know,
right.
They don't
have
time.
Right. I mean, when I, you know, when I was preparing, when I covered the Orange Bowl Classic back in December, and I was preparing for that Florida State South Florida game and the Florida Wake Forest game, I mean, I got to do phone interviews one-on-one with four or five Florida State players. Those were conversations that only I had with them, and got to pick up a lot of different things from it, and you know, got to work in some of that stuff. But you know, I think that's a great point. Like, you look at how much time we spend in the Jaguar locker room, and a lot of those conversations are not necessarily things you planned on, but you get great pieces of information from it. So, you know, every story has its place, and sometimes you still don't get to fit in some of those great stories, and it's a bummer when that happens, but, you know, a lot
then
of times...
you blog about it.
Yeah, a lot of times you do, or you tweet it out, or you, you know, you have a conversation with someone who asks about the game. So it all works out in the long run.
Well... now it's going to be get-to-know Lauren time when we come back, right?
I suppose.
Oh, we're excited.
I can't wait to hear the embarrassing stories that you have that are going to try and top mine.
Yes. Oh, I'm not trying to top yours. I'm going to keep it classy.
More back on Helmets and Heels next, right here live from Broadway Restaurante, 295 and Bay Meadows.
Girls just want to talk football. More Helmets and Heels. Now on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Girls just want to talk about Lauren. Right? She doesn't even want to
talk
because this is her song. Yeah, we're not going to let this go on, because that's going to be an awful few minutes.
I'm a music aficionado, and I don't know what this is.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
So, I have no idea who it is either.
This is Stevie Ray Vaughan, Life by the Drop.
And Stevie Ray.
One of the all-time great acoustic guitar 12-string guitar songs. This is one of my favorite
songs beautiful.
Of all time. What most people think about this song is that it's about an alcoholic, right? Life by the Drop. And if you listen to the lyrics all the way through, which I wish we could, I should have been a DJ. The song sounds like it's about Stevie Ray Vaughan writing about an alcoholic. However, it's actually about, one of his friends wrote it, about how his friend never really pursued his career in music, but Stevie Ray Vaughan did, and the discrepancy in their lives between one of them really living life to the fullest and one of them not. And so to me, the song is just so representative of all of those people who really want to chase their dream and kind of always come up with excuses as to why not to do it. And the reason I wanted that song on this show and the whole get to know thing is, like, as it represents me and Helmets and Heels and the radio station in general, is I had a full-time gig, director of financial aid for 8.5 years. I didn't need to do radio, and I just never stopped believing that it was something I wanted to do. And so you're never too old, despite what Will Blackman would say. You're never too old to chase your dreams.
Did he really say that to you?
No, he didn't.
Oh, okay.
It was something along the lines, though, of I was teasing him about it being a little younger, and he was saying, I'm older than you think I am, really.
Okay.
Is what he said. I'm closer to your age. But I couldn't let him get away tonight without a little teasing, because he totally picked on me on his way out. So he deserved it.
Well, it is Get to Know You. You're our final Yikes. Member of Get to Know You for Helmets and Heels. So, sure. Lauren, let's start at the beginning. Tell me where you grew up. I don't even know that.
I grew up in Atlantic Beach.
How about that?
So a couple blocks from the beach, and that was a huge part of my childhood. My mom's probably most embarrassing moment would be the fact that when I was 2 weeks old, she took me to the beach and put me under a sheet and thought that would protect me from the sun. And she got her newborn completely sunburned and was, like, so embarrassed to bring me out for the next, like, 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Right. So the beach was always a big part of my life growing
Your
up.
Your skin looks fine now, so I'm assuming you healed
Thanks,
well.
Thanks, just don't ask me to smile. Recently, I went to a gas station and was buying alcohol, and not much, just a little bit. And the lady asked for an ID, and when I smiled, she goes, "Oh no, you're good. You smiled."
Oh,
yeah, that's right. Don't
that's
smile.
Awful. Rude.
Ever, apparently, once you've looked a little bit.
Tom Champion, why is that? Why do we have smile lines?
Smile lines. Smile lines.
It tells us our age.
And probably a little bit of skin.
Yeah.
Know,
no, it's smile lines. And smile lines are a great thing. You would so much rather have smile lines in anything.
Than frown lines. Absolutely.
Yeah, totally. Especially in the forehead. You don't want any of those.
That's you are as crazy about college football as I am about college basketball. What is it that you love so much about college football?
I love the fact that schools have an identity. And while in the NFL, the players can change and even fans can jump around teams, you'll almost never meet a college football fan who didn't grow up loving that team, or they chose their school and then that's the reason that they absolutely love it. So you have people that have lived their whole lives usually focused on one team, and they have favorite coaches and favorite players. And yes, there's some transferring, but for the most part, those players are out there and most of them will not get paid to do that job. And they are giving their heart and soul. And think about August, how hot it is and how we all complain. And they're doing 3-a-days. And, they fight for each other and they scrap. And sometimes the most unexpected things happen, like this year. And, anyone who knows me knows I hate Ohio State. But at the same time, you have to look at the example of them. Their third string quarterback won them the national championship in the first ever college football playoff system. That's unreal. That doesn't happen in normal life. In 20 years, that's going to be a movie.
And played well. Wasn't just a game manager. Played well.
Cardale Jones, you had to cheer for him even if you weren't cheering for those awful Buckeyes. So there's just something I think that's extra passionate about college football fans and about the teams that they cheer for.
What about
I love it.
Sports in general? When did you decide that you wanted to get into covering sports?
I don't think I realized that there was a place for a female in radio and sports until probably 2009 or so. And I was tuning back into sports talk radio, and for a long time it drove me crazy because people would talk over each other and you couldn't really understand what they were saying, and there was a lot of arguments. And that was kind of the older ways of sports talk. And so I've listened to it forever, but I kind of went in phases. And then I started re-listening to it probably around that time frame, and I heard Jessica, and I immediately, the first time I think I heard her voice, I looked her up and I was like, who is she? Wow. How did she get there? How do I get there? And then I slowly just started to think about it as a possibility. And then I went up to Frank a couple years ago at Sneakers, and I said, I've been coming to your shows since I was 11 years old at actually a place out at the beach a long time ago. Strings is what it was called. And he was like, can you please not talk about things that are like 20 years ago? I was like, but that's how long I've been listening. And we had free throw competitions and I loved it. So it was somewhat recently, but then I fell into basically the XL primetime producing gig. And then I switched to Jaguars Today when they changed up the times. And even though I don't get to do it full time or even part time full time now, I look forward to Tuesday nights so much. And anytime I get to join Jaguars City now, it just excites me and I love it. So that's the answer.
What are some of, before financial aid and before radio, what are some of the odd jobs you had?
My first job was at CD Warehouse, and I used to have to close the store at night. And I was terrified because there was all this cash, because, back then people actually used cash.
Right.
And then I worked at Soccer Stop for a long time. And the part about that job that was great was I could study for the SATs because I kept having to retake them. Oh, those were the worst. Babysitting, I did a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And all the moms would be like, this is going to be really good for you throughout your life because you won't want to have kids. You didn't have that effect on you?
No.
But see, you waited. That's what they meant.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, you will wait.
You'll wait.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
They were right. Yeah.
Smart.
Other odd jobs. I've never mowed a lawn. So that's
ever?
Not one of them. Ever. To this date, I've never mowed a lawn.
Have you ever
mowed a lawn?
Me neither. My dad wouldn't let me use the lawnmower. I wanted to so badly. I was like, Dad, can I please mow the yard? And he's like, no, I don't want you to use the
We didn't
the
have
lawnmower.
A yard at all.
Like, okay.
Riding lawnmower, yes. push mower, no.
No,
but were you
never.
Riding that for the fun, or were you riding that to mow the lawn?
It used to be my go-kart.
See?
I wanted a go-kart when I was little, and he would let me ride the dang mower.
Have you ever gotten a golf cart?
No, not a go-kart, no. I was never allowed to have one.
Or a golf cart.
Golf cart, yeah. I was a cart girl. So,
see,
yeah.
The parents...
That's a good odd job.
I can't say all the parents. The parents, to me, seem smart when your child is like, can I mow the lawn? Yes!
Yeah.
Go right ahead. That chore is now taken care of. Thank you.
A funny
you need
story
to do that.
And I never tell the person's name because it's still a close friend, but we joked about the ugly duckling childhood, right?
Yes.
And so when I was about 11, I remember watching the news and thinking, man, I want to be an anchor. That's just a great job. You get to sit there and tell people about what's going on in life. And then I said that to one of my family friends, and they said, oh, honey, you're not attractive enough for that job.
Oh, my gosh. Lord, so, what is going on?
No, what's funny is, so from that time, that's when I got away from the idea of broadcast journalism. And it's funny that you went the opposite route, and you went right into it. I should have known better, right? My eighth grade teacher, that was probably one of the more embarrassing things, is my eighth grade teacher came up to me one time, and she goes, don't worry, honey. I used to be, not as good looking as I am now, and I grew out of it too. And I was like, wait, I'm not attractive? Here I thought I was.
See, middle school sucks, man.
It really does.
There's nothing good about middle school.
You'll grow out of it.
Yeah, nothing good.
All right, let's talk about better times.
Sure.
University of Florida, that's a place that is very near and dear to both of us. What do you love about Gainesville and being able to go back for Gator games?
Well, growing up, I only missed one day of school each year. And every year at the Catholic school where I went, they had a ceremony for perfect attendance. And every year I had to sit in the pews and not get up to go on the altar because I missed perfect attendance. And I only missed one day. I never was sick. But the one day I missed every single year was homecoming for Florida.
Worth it.
My parents took me out of school, took me down there. They ran the 5K. We sat on the sidewalk. I stuffed my face with boiled peanuts, which I will still eat way too much of to this day, like a whole gallon. I'll just go to town. So I have really young memories of being in Gainesville and family, you know, friends and just having a blast.
That's just good parenting, in my opinion.
It really is. Yeah, and I would do the same thing for my kids if I hadn't babysat for all those years. So and then from then, sports, yeah. I thought a long time about which college I wanted to go to because I was heavy into academics, and I finally decided I can't go anywhere other than Florida because – I love that football team so much. And so, yeah, college was all about going to games, getting your heart broken, because I was in the freshman year of Spurrier and then 3 years of Zook, which I loved Zook. Great recruiter. Just couldn't quite, you know, get it together. But Florida-Georgia games, I love about Florida. College basketball games going back. My parents and I usually go back every single year for college basketball
games. Did your parents go?
That's where my parents met.
Okay.
So I kind of missed that part of the story, too.
That's okay.
They met in a Todd always says they met under the stars.
Oh, nice.
He carried her books for her. Yeah, yeah. So then I thought when I got to school that I would meet my husband at Florida. You know, that didn't happen. Maybe I should have
taken astrology. Hey, you're still going to the games. You don't know.
You're right, exactly.
But did you have fun on campus?
That's of course, yeah.
What was your
I gained,
best?
Like,
most
the
fun.
Freshman 40 and the senior 40, I think, and lost weight in between. Some of my best moments were there was this one bar that we went to where you could bring your own liquor in. That was fantastic. And we sang karaoke, and that was a lot of fun. A lot of them have to do with bars. Is that bad? I mean, it is college.
No, not at all.
Balls, I love the bar Balls. That's a great bar. You can sign your name on the walls.
Did you ever go to Lillian's?
We did go to Lillian's.
Lillian's
was a lot of
fun. My favorite.
Alligator Rocks, did you ever go there? The dueling piano bars. Went to a lot of
8 Seconds.
I loved 8 Seconds. That was my place.
City,
every Thursday
excess.
Night.
8 Seconds, the one that was in Jacksonville?
No, the one in Gainesville.
No.
Okay. The one in Gainesville.
The one in Gainesville is legit.
We would dance to Copperhead Road and Dixieland Delight, and oh gosh, those are great memories. I loved 8 Seconds.
Okay,
Thursday nights and Saturday
nights.
Makes me
want to go back to Gainesville.
I know. And for years after graduating from college, I would recruit my Jacksonville friends to go because I was like, y'all, you don't understand how much fun this
place
is.
Did you cry the week of graduation?
Yes and no. Part of me was excited to get back to the beach.
And be done with school, because I studied for so many. I studied like 3 hours a night every night from the age of 8 till I graduated from college. I was one of those crazy people, and so I.
Well, if
I
you got weren't good looking, what else are you gonna do?
Thank you, thank you.
Just kidding.
No, for real, no. So yeah, I drank my problems away, Donna. She tells me. If only I looked like you, you know, growing up, I would have been a dancer.
Oh, no.
I would have danced.
We haven't seen mine pictures, so that's okay.
No, I love Gainesville. I still love going back. That was funny. Did you ever go to gymnastics meets in Gainesville? Those were a lot of fun, too.
I did on occasion, and I went to some tennis matches.
Yeah.
I went to a ton of baseball games, obviously, because I covered the team for 2 years. That final year at Florida, I sat press row for every men's basketball game because I covered the team. I covered volleyball. So, I mean, I went to a lot of different sports, but a lot of it was because I was covering it, because I was volunteering for the TV station on campus. So.
And that was one of the best things about growing up is my parents put me in literally every sport. Everything. And
that's
then,
awesome.
Yeah, so it was good. I got to experience all of them.
What'd you play?
Well,
tennis?
Tennis, swimming, volleyball, soccer.
What was your favorite?
Softball. I never played golf, I will say that. My favorite was probably, I played soccer through high school, and a lot of the teammates I had went on to play in college at small schools. But swimming was probably my favorite. That's where I feel like I was probably the best. But the reason I quit is because you can't talk while you swim.
That is not a surprise. You are our social butterfly, not just for Helmets and Heels, but for the entire radio station. What was your favorite stroke?
Freestyle.
Nice.
Yeah.
See, we are a kindred spirit.
We are. Yeah. And I still, in the pools today, I don't know about you, any body of water I'm in, really, I'll be like, let's go.
You know what's really funny? I actually, like, when I would surf, like, anything, I went snorkeling when I went on my cruise, when I was in Cozumel. I still dolphin kick. I don't, you know, do freestyle kick. I do butterfly kick for everything.
One of the scariest moments I ever had was my swim team went to Itchituckney, and they made us go upstream, no arms. Butterfly kick.
What?
And I thought I was going to literally die of drowning. And I was one of the younger ones, too. It was mainly everyone older than us on the BAC team. And, yeah, I came back and I was like, Mom, Dad, don't
Yeah, no, we're kind of again. Sinking into this world where you have to understand, like, you would only understand if you were a swimmer how difficult swimming against the current and not being able to use your arms. Because for me, I generated 99% of my power from my arms and like 1% from my legs. So I hated kicking drills. I hated.
Yeah,
hated,
but I,
hated,
you know, the one thing I liked about them on the kickboard?
You can talk!
You can talk! Hey! Let's complain now. But yeah, so just to wrap it up, I had a phenomenal childhood. My dad and my mom too, but my dad is obsessed with sports. He watches, as I mentioned, every Florida sport. He can tell you about the softball team. He can tell you about the track and field team. He can tell you about the swim team. It's amazing. And so when people say they're Florida fans, I'm like, you're a Florida football fan. In my household, like, you're a Florida fan. And my younger brother is an officer in the Marine Corps, and so there's now that element of, like, the military stuff, too. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, sports, non-military, and he's got two beautiful little girls, so we've got, like, the little grandkids around, too.
Oh, you can babysit again.
I can, yes, when I feel like it.
Oh, this has been fun.
This has been fun.
It's been really fun. And a big shout-out to Broadway Restaurant and Pizzeria for
Christine.
Hosting us. Christine, thank you so much. Our producer, Scott Irvine, back at the station making it all happen. And every single one of you who came out tonight to see our broadcast, we appreciate it. We hope you've had a good time.